Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 137 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis, here with Sean Sears, both writers for NBC Sports Chicago. I also write for Bet Chicago, The Athletic, several others. The Cubs won in Atlanta last night. We'll get to that in just a minute. We'll also talk about an injury that happened, a trade that happened. We'll talk a little about Jose Quintana, who's today's starter, and then we'll look at the NL Central. But before all that, how's it going, man?
I'm doing good. It's Friday. I'm excited for the weekend. I normally work weekends, but I just had hours changed at my work, so I have my first like real weekend off since like I was just talking to my girlfriend about this, like probably since high school. I feel like I've had weekends off, but it's never been like, oh, you don't actually have work, or like you're not using PTO. You can just go live your life. Like, I'm gonna be able to watch football. I can like take naps. Like, this is a life changing moment for me, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, I would be excited too. And yeah, I mean, I guess when I was your age and even beyond your age, I was doing the same thing. I never had like full weekends off. And even after I got married, my wife just kind of adjusted to the fact that I worked a very different schedule from her. So when I eventually did get a job that was like 8:30 to 5 p.m. and I was on like Monday through Friday and I was on the same schedule as her, she all of a sudden realized, she's like, hey, go do something else every once in a while. Stop hanging around me. I'm used to you not being here all the time.
Yeah, hopefully I can see my girlfriend being like that, but right now she's just excited to have someone to hang out with on the weekend, so that's cool. Yeah. But we'll get to that point, I'm sure, at some point.
Yeah, right. She just, I think, was used to like, hey, I have these shows I watch that you don't watch that I want to watch, and now yeah, I can't watch them because you're always like, hey, what do you want to do? We have time together.
I'm most excited because the new Spider-Man video game comes out next weekend, and I don't have to for it now. So
yeah, right. Yep. Excellent. Let's get into baseball. Yesterday's game was a little weird. Mike Montgomery got off to a great start, but then he got into some trouble in the fifth. He ended up striking out six batters, which is a lot for him, in just 4 1/3 innings. But he also allowed 8 hits, 4 earned runs. They basically came in his 2 final innings. 3 of them came in that fifth where he recorded just 1 out. It was a classic better than his stat line kind of game that we've talked about before, and it was somewhat understandable given it was his first start off the DL. The Cubs were down 4-3 at that point, but Tommy La Stella pinch hit with a 2-run homer, his first of the season, to give the Cubs a 5-4 lead, and that would end up being the final score. It should be noted, Brandon Kinstler came in and actually did okay. He allowed an inherited runner, but it was a guy on third base with 1 out, and yeah, he got 2 outs and got you out of an inning. So it was okay. It's really interesting that even in a tight, like essentially tie game at that point in the fifth inning, that Madden is still going to Brandon Kinstler like before anybody else. I mean, this is a guy that he's thrown out the last few games, it seems.
Yeah, I don't know if like maybe some of the other guys are tired or something, but he does have like the right makeup as a guy that can get you like that double play. He does get a lot of sinker balls and you just hit the zone, like the lower portion of the zone, and can, you know, nail the corners, I guess. But yeah, I mean, he looked pretty bad before yesterday, and clearly we talked about it a bunch yesterday. So I don't know. Madden must be confident in the guy. I mean, good for him that he's putting him out there in moments. But yeah, he definitely seemed like a guy that could come in with like a 4, 5, 6 run lead and just be like, okay, work through your problems. Not like, all right, man, help us win this game.
Right. Well, today the Cubs go to Philadelphia, obviously part of this road trip. Stop in Atlanta, now in Philadelphia. At least they get to be there for 3 days instead of 1 day. But today's matchup, Jose Quintana on the mound against Nick Pivetta. And Pivetta has a 4.76 ERA in 136 innings for the Phils this year. Over his last 2 starts, he's thrown 10 innings with 15 hits, 4 walks, 2 homers, 9 strikeouts, and 11 earned runs. Quintana has been really hit and miss this year, as we've talked about on the podcast frequently, but his last 2 starts have been fairly solid. He went 5 innings in each. He totaled 10 hits, only 3 earned runs. So let's talk a little bit about Quintana. The stat that I threw out to you before we started the podcast, over his last 6 starts, he's averaging right at 5 innings and 86 pitches thrown. It just seems like he gets sort of tired, or maybe the third time through the lineup kind of gets him. I don't know what it is. I mean, he's had a couple starts where he's just cruising right along, and then you get to like the sixth inning and all of a sudden he gets bombed. Is it fair to say maybe he's just like a five inning, you just hope for five solid innings out of him at this point?
I would think so at this point. I mean, especially when you talk about rosters expanding tomorrow, you're going to have some options you can go to after the fifth inning that you don't have to worry about blowing through some of your other guys. But yeah, I mean, if Quintana's going to give you five innings and that's about it, I mean, I guess go for it. It makes sense. And he's essentially just a fastball curveball pitcher at this point. We talked about how he doesn't use his changeup nearly as often as he probably, as you and I think he should. He isn't very predictable, or he becomes very predictable, and that makes sense going through the third time in the lineup is roughly around the fifth, sixth inning. So I would assume at that point guys are figuring him out. I mean, you see like his pitch counts are like, I mean, he's had one game, that one game in St. Louis where he went seven innings, he went like to like 121 pitches, but beyond that, it's like, you know, 94, 98, 93, 89, then a couple 70 pitch outings. Clearly those ones were bad. I don't know if it's just like Quintana doesn't have like the, I don't know, energy to get that past or get that far or deep into the game, or maybe teams are just figuring him out. But yeah, I mean, if you can only hope for five innings, it's better than him going three or four, I guess, is the way to look at it. But it's a little discouraging, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you can get five solid innings out of him, I'm okay with that, as long as it's not if it's a problem that won't carry on to next year. If it's just for the rest of this year, all they can really hope for is five innings, I'm okay with that. If he turns into all I can do is five innings pretty much every time out, and maybe occasionally get you six, that's not really what you want out of a guy that you traded Eloy Jimenez for. And that's a trade I've defended and I continue to defend, simply because it was the right deal at the right time. It made sense. Jimenez was a great prospect, but he wasn't even in the top 10 at that point. He was still like number 14 or 15. It was a smart trade for a pitcher who had been one of the most consistent and best left-handed pitchers in the game for several years, who was just maybe having a rough start with the White Sox last year, but it's really kind of continued to carry, and he's just not the same guy he was anymore. And a lot of that is what you just alluded to. He doesn't throw the changeup nearly as much, still gets swings and misses at it, probably better than just about any other pitch. And, you know, I wrote that piece at Bet Chicago that everyone's referenced before. He gets more swings and misses on his changeup than and as he's thrown it less, he's thrown the curveball more, and as he's thrown the curveball more, the velocity on the curveball has dropped a couple miles per hour, and batters are swinging or they're whiffing less at it. So it just seems like more changeups generally equates to more effectiveness with his curveball.
Yeah, and I mean, like, his curveball isn't anything out of this world. You know, it's just a curveball. It has a good drop. It can bounce into the ground. He can get it to hit the corner sometimes, but it's not like fantastic. It's really just a pitch that works when you're ahead of the count and you've got a guy looking for a fastball maybe, or, you know, knowing he's got to hit that pitch or protect the plate. It works better in that situation than it does as like, you know, an out pitch. And I've seen Quintana a couple times this year and a little bit more last year. He would work backwards and start with that curveball sometimes, and that works to an extent, but he doesn't have that like lively fastball that really he can like pair with that would be a good combination. So it just seems like he's got to add more pitches. He's got to add more to his arsenal to keep guys thinking, and it just doesn't seem like he has the confidence to do that. So that's just me inferring. There's no type of like, you know, whatever, I have some inside information type of stuff, but that's just kind of my two cents on it. So
yeah, looking ahead towards the playoffs, though, this is something we've talked about before as well. The idea that Mike Montgomery probably won't be in the rotation at that point. He'll be in the bullpen, but he'll still be able to go a couple innings each time out. Is that what you think Joe Maddon's plan for Quintana will be? Maybe give him a game for a start, but, you know, let him go four innings or four and a third. And then the first sign of any sort of trouble, maybe the first walk, the first base hit allowed, you know, the first time Quintana seems to just lose the zone, maybe you bring in Mike Montgomery immediately, let him go, you know, two innings, two and a third, two and two thirds, three innings, something like that, and then bridge, you know, get you to the seventh inning so long as he's effective. Maybe just do a piggyback kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way you got to go through it. And especially when you talk about like how many options the Cubs will have on the next couple of days, especially, you know, at least for the regular season. For postseason, yeah, I think Jose Quintana, Mike Montgomery pairing up for like seven innings or eight innings, maybe even if you really want to do that, they're both pitching well. is something I'm very much game for. They both would complement each other well, I think, because, you know, Montgomery has a little more velocity and more pitching options, where Quintana is usually pretty effective and locates for the most part well. So it'd be a good pairing, and plus two lefties back to back, you can't really change the way the approach you want to go with. So I don't know. I think that's the move. Particularly since everyone else in the rotation, I think I'm pretty confident in saying they can go six or seven if they need to. Quintana, when you're talking about postseason starters, at least out of, you know, Lester, Hendricks, Quintana, and Hamels, that'd be the guy. I'm just realizing now, though, the Cubs are very left-handed heavy in the rotation.
They are, yeah. Basically, just Hendricks is the only righty they have out of their basic five, if you're not including Alec Mills. So, yeah, I wouldn't think Alec Mills would be anywhere near a postseason roster. If he is, that means some injuries have happened.
Something terribly wrong has happened, unfortunately.
Yeah. Let's wrap on that. We can go to the second segment. We'll talk about Jason Hayward and an injury he had. The Cubs made a trade and some more talk about another player who might be coming up to the big leagues and a Chris Bryant update. So let's go at this trade yesterday. Bobby Wilson. He's a catcher for the Twins, or at least he was. He's an interesting dude. I told you this before we started. In February, I went to Fort Myers on a little vacation, which is very close to where the Twins have their camp. And I went to do a story on a couple players, one of them actually, Chris Jimenez, who had signed with the Cubs. And I wanted quotes from Twins players about Jimenez. I wanted to talk to, I think I talked to, you know, whoever it was, Alex Cobb, whoever. Is that who it was? I don't remember. No, it wasn't Alex Cobb. He was with the Orioles. The other one, Jake Odorizzi.
Yeah.
The other former Tampa Bay Ray. I did a story on him, and then I ended up just chatting with Bobby Wilson for a little while, some of it in a group with a few of the beat reporters there. And he's just a really interesting kind of self-aware dude. He's more self-aware than most baseball players are. You know how they're all kind of in their bubble?
Yeah.
You know, they all think they're God's gift to baseball, which, and I know that's kind of like a stereotype, but it's true. They all think they're the best at what they do. You know, when guys like Jason Hayward says that he thinks he could win the MVP this season, he actually believes that, because he thinks, you know, he struggled the last 2 years, but he thinks like, oh, I'm good enough. I could turn it around and win MVP. Like, they, most of them feel that way about themselves. Bobby Wilson understands who he is and what he is. He's very personable. I think he's going to be a great fit for the Cubs. He has a great kind of self-deprecating sense of humor. He knows, again, that he's not very good. He's good defensively. He can't hit. He's essentially a pitcher at the plate for the most part. One thing I can specifically remember him talking about and joking about was he was playing with Torrey Hunter in Anaheim, and they had two hotshot outfield prospects behind him. One, Peter Borges. Sorry, losing my voice today. One of them, Peter Borges, and the other one, Mike Trout. And Torrey Hunter basically was telling him, he's like, no, these guys aren't going to steal my spot in the lineup. They're not going to take my spot for me. And, you know, of course, Mike Trout comes up at 19 years old, and, you know, Torrey Hunter ends up retiring. It was just a really fun kind of story. Yeah, he talked about, you know, Torrey Hunter like giving him his autograph on like a glove or something like that. It was just like, this is a really personable guy that I think is going to fit really well in the Cubs clubhouse.
Yeah, that's awesome. They need someone that can keep down to earth, I think, a little bit, because there can be some inflated egos, maybe is the way to put it, in the Cubs locker room. I mean, you're right. I mean, like, Jason Hayward is a guy that thinks he could win an MVP, and I could see why. I mean, you know, his rookie year, he hit 30-plus home runs or something like that. So, I mean, I could see him thinking that. I think the majority of us are probably saying that ship sailed 4 years ago, but you never know. But, yeah, I mean, I like Bobby Wilson. I think he's a solid piece. I don't know. You know, we'll have to see how things go in September if he really does make this postseason roster. At least he gives the Cubs maybe a guy that can be better at framing than maybe both Contreras and Carantini. Looking at some of his baseball prospectus, if I could speak today, geez. Their BP stats.
BP stats, yes.
On framing. He ranked it to 22nd overall on framing runs, and I don't necessarily put a ton of stock into that, but clearly he's got a little bit better of a pedigree, at least, you know, maybe stealing some strikes than Contreras or Carantini. Contreras is the worst at it in baseball right now in that stat. He's supposedly cost the Cubs 15.1 runs saved in framing. I don't know how you calculate that or how reliable that is, and I could be interpreting that stat entirely wrong, but basically what you can take from it is Contreras isn't very good at framing up pitches, whereas Wilson could be a little bit better at it. That's interesting and a good piece to have. And he's nailed, I think, 8 base runners from behind home plate right now. So, I mean, you know, I'll take that. Whatever he brings to the plate is whatever he brings. Defensively, he's definitely an upgrade over some of the backup options the Cubs had this year. So,
yeah, I'm not totally sold that they would put him on the playoff roster yet, but some of those things that you like about him are reason to believe that they might consider it. In the playoffs, I would expect that Wilson Contreras would probably catch pretty much every single game. And Victor Caratini, if he's on the roster, would be limited to just pretty much pinch hitting, and maybe getting double switched into a game at best. But you know, if Contreras does end up like on a hot streak and you know, goes in the playoffs hitting a little more like last year than he was than he has most of this year, then maybe you don't want to really switch that guy out of the game. So I'm not sure yet which way the Cubs would go with a backup catcher for the postseason, but. If you're talking about, you know, you might want to keep Caratini for pinch hitting purposes. Well, he's a better hitter than Bobby Wilson is, but he's not a better hitter than pretty much anybody else. So he hasn't really done it in the big leagues this year. So, you probably have at least one extra roster spot for an outfielder or somebody who could actually, you know, take a plate appearance versus what you've done for the year, simply because Mike Montgomery goes to the bullpen and, you know, you still carry 8 relievers, but you only have to carry 4 starters, so you get that extra guy on the bench. So I'm not sure if Caratini really is all that necessary for his skill set and what he's done this year on a postseason roster. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, this is an interesting trade, and you know, you give up someone in Chris Jimenez who likely at this point, he was with the Cubs roster for about essentially a month, basically. Didn't really do much, wasn't great on the plate. Defensively, there wasn't really much of a difference. I know you talked about a bunch how he just is a nice clubhouse guy. He's a good, personable dude, and he adds kind of similar to what we're kind of maybe hoping Bobby Wilson can add, but in a different way.
Yeah.
Nice, encouraging guy, which, you know, that I appreciate that as a baseball player, but clearly when it comes down to it, Cubs looking at production, not, you know, who's going to make everyone laugh in the clubhouse. Unfortunately. It pretty much, we know Wilson Contreras is going to get the majority of these games in the postseason. It really is just like, you know, do you need another backup guy, or Wilson does need a day off or whatever. At least Bobby Wilson could come in September, maybe give Wilson a day or two off. So a lot of Wilsons on this team though.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. The other thing is that what's interesting is that the fact that they traded Chris Jimenez for a guy who is very similar to him rather than put him on the 40-man roster, and it even cost them DFA and Corey Mazzoni to do it. So I think that goes as far as you need to know how the Cubs front office felt about those comments that Chris Jimenez made about Yu Darvish earlier this year, kind of painting him. It was with good intentions, but it painted him as kind of soft, and it started a media firestorm of sports talk radio saying this guy's soft, they gave him too much money, blah blah blah. So yeah, I think the Cubs front office really didn't appreciate those comments.
Yeah, that's kind of what my takeaway from it was as well. I was thinking that too, just like I can't imagine the Cubs were happy that they had to deal with that. And like you said, I don't think Jimenez was necessarily being like, you know, trying to be difficult or create that, but I don't know, if you think twice about those comments and think about who you're talking to with those comments, like, they're going to turn anything into a story. And that's exactly what they did. And then Darvish had to talk about it. And then he had that weird blog post where he talked about how he was frustrated with the fans too. And it just like piled onto it more. It was just like, oh my God, let this guy go out there and play baseball instead of having to decide if he's worried the fans like him or not or whatever.
Just, right.
So
let's talk a little bit about a guy who could be on that postseason roster if they wanted to take an extra outfielder, or maybe just a guy who comes up in September. Terrence Gore, he's at AAA this year. They traded for him, what, maybe like a month ago, 3 weeks ago. This is a guy who doesn't hit, and in fact has been in the big leagues off and on for a while now. I think he's been up and down for maybe the last 4 years with the Royals.
Yes.
And has not collected his first big league hit, but he has quite a few stolen bases. He is what you would describe as a burner on the base pads, or we could say, if we wanted to use scout speak, he has 80 speed. So you looked up some stats. What stats do you have on Terrence Gore?
In Major League Baseball, at least in this 4 seasons that he's kind of been called up the Royals, he has 21 stolen bases. He's only been caught stealing 4 times. He has 14 runs scored. He's only been walked once and still has never had a hit in just 14 plate appearances. Impressive, I will say that, that he has been able to get a hit. I mean, I guess when you're limited to pretty much just pinch run situations. But, I mean, in Triple A Iowa, he has a couple hits here. He's already got 5 stolen bases. He's went down with the club for 11 games. With Triple A, the Royals Triple A team, he had 16 stolen bases. He had close to 30 hits. He was batting like, I don't know, like 250 at one point for Triple A, and then kind of went on this spurt where he struck out a bunch. He's got 36 strikeouts, so he's back to like 211. He was batting 211 when he got traded, batting 118. He's not going to add anything on like the actual bat itself, but he's got plenty of speed. He does play pretty well on the defensive end. I don't know how great his arm is, but he covers a lot of ground, actually, which makes sense because he is just stupid fast. He's going to be a difference maker maybe in the way that Leonis Martin was last year, kind of played some moments, freed up some spots for, you know, some guys to take some days off. But he's not necessarily incredible out in the outfield. He just covers a lot of ground, and I guess – if defensive metrics don't really like him. He's a -1 defensive run saved apparently for his career. But he covers just a crazy amount of ground. So who knows? He could be a piece that, you know, maybe adds something to the Cubs. He's at least an okay fourth outfielder. If Hayward does have to take some time off, but there's definitely, I mean, you know, expect worse Tony Campana is what my comp would be.
Yeah, that's fair. And this is a guy that, again, the only way he's missed a postseason roster is probably if their injuries are serious. We haven't talked about Hayward yet. He dove for a pitch, or dove for a ball yesterday in the outfield that ended up being a triple by a 2 RBI triple by Freddie Freeman. But Hayward couldn't quite get to it. He dove for it. He injured his right hamstring. We don't know the extent of that injury yet. He did come out of the game. At this point, using the 10-day DL is moronic would be the right phrase, I guess. Why would you even DL a guy at this point unless it was 60-day DL to open up a 40-man roster spot? But there's no point in putting him on the DL. They're just going to rest him as long as he needs to. So with the rosters expanding tomorrow and Hayward being such an important player to your team in general heading towards the postseason, I would think, you know, even without talking about guys like Gore, with Bryant coming back, you have him, Zobrist, Almora, Schwarber, and Happ, who could take turns in the outfield. With Hayward injured, you could move Bryant out there for a little while, put Bodie in at third base a little bit. So I don't think there's any reason to try and rush Hayward back. If they need to give him a week off, that's fine. If they needed to give him 2 weeks off, I think that's fine too. Just let him rest and get right.
Yeah, that's kind of the move. I was talking to Tony Andracki last night, and we both got some Bleacher Report push saying that the Cubs or Hayward could potentially go into the as likely to be put on the disabled list is exactly what the DR said, or the BR push said. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, you're literally going to have 40 guys to choose from to put on your roster in just a day. Why would you even use this disabled list here? So I expect Hayward to maybe sit out this weekend if he's really just struggling. I know it's his hamstring, and he's had some issues with it in the past, so hopefully it's okay. But yeah, there's no reason to put him on the disabled list.
I guess the only reason you might possibly do it is if you thought it was an injury that was going to take maybe 2 weeks, and then you wanted to get him like a rehab stint in like Arizona or something like that, and like, you know, whatever rookie league might still be playing at that point, maybe that's, or somebody's playoffs, maybe that's a reason to do it so that you could get rehab games. But at this point, I don't think you're at a point where you're going to be asking him to take 2 weeks off and then go do rehab starts. So yeah, I think this is pretty cut and dry. Just let him sit for a week or 2 weeks or however long he needs to get right, or maybe just a few days. I mean, if it's not a serious injury, if it's just, kind of like a cramp or a slight pull, maybe it's only 3 or 4 days and then he could get back out there. So we're only really speculating at this point, but I just can't see why the DL would make any sense.
He did get up on his own power. He looked like he was fine. It just was probably bothering him a little bit. And, there's no reason to risk it right now. There's no reason to push him in a game that, it'd be nice to win, but it's not like they're in must-win situation in every game they go into right now. You've bought yourself a little bit of leeway and flexibility. If, you have to sit Jason Hayward for a week, just, you do it. You've got, first off, the depth alone on the major league roster as is to, absorb a guy like losing Hayward for a little bit. Long-term wise, of course, you're going to miss his defense, but offensively, he's had a better year, but he was still OPSing 400 as of a couple weeks ago for the month of August. So it's not like he's been tearing the ball off the cover or anything like that. So you can just, absorb that loss for the moment. There's no reason to throw him on the disabled list.
Speaking of Bryant, who I mentioned just a minute ago, he did end up playing yesterday. I mentioned yesterday that I thought he wasn't going to play. That was the most recent update I had at that point, but he did end up playing, going 0-for-2 with 2 strikeouts yesterday. He left the game early, felt fine, basically was just ready to go. I was going to get some rain today, so I think that's maybe why he decided he felt ready to play yesterday instead of taking the day off and then playing today. So he's going to take today off, and then tomorrow it sounds like he's going to be called up with he's going to get his first September call-up. That's nice for him.
Good for him. It's always nice to get your first. I do think it's a little annoying, though, that Chris Bryant has been able to dictate pretty much his entire rehab process here. But Yu Darvish can't, say something about him, his arm hurting and he doesn't want to throw, or, he needs to get an MRI done, and Cubs Twitter just loses their mind. It's just like a little bit of a double standard here. I know we're talking about Chris Bryant, and clearly this is an MVP player that Cubs fans adore and trust and whatnot. And Darvish is a new guy that's had injury history and has been bad when he was here for a little bit and healthy. I just think it's a little bit of a double standard. Why don't we cut Yu Darvish a little bit of break? He had Tommy John surgery. His arm was hurting when he's throwing. It turns out he has essentially a stress fracture, stress reduction, whatever you want to call it, in his arm. I think it's a little ridiculous that we're chastising Yu Darvish, but we're all just super excited to see Chris Bryant come back up for the Cubs. Whatever.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's the way they've painted the picture is that Darvish was running his rehab and that everyone was kind of concerned about that, but Bryant's been running his own rehab and it's been fine. He has been saying things like that he's been listening to the doctors, but Darvish was doing that too. It wasn't like Darvish was just brushing off what the doctors were telling him. So very similar situations, but the way it's been, the picture that has been painted in each spot for the fans has been very different.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Yu Darvish is sitting on his phone Googling WebMD and being like, should I throw today or not? I don't know.
I like that image, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's not what's going on. That's what everyone thinks it is, but that's also very short-sighted and stupid. So,
Siri, should I throw a bullpen or a sim game today? I don't know, you.
Oh, man.
All right, let's go to our final segment. We'll talk about the NL Central, and we can just kind of wrap from there. So the Cubs won yesterday, which is good, because by the time they finished their game, the Brewers had beaten the Reds 2-1 in 11 innings, and the Cardinals had jumped all over the Pirates and won 5-0. So the Cubs needed a win to keep pace and keep everybody at arm's distance. Today, the Brewers head to Washington to start a series with the Nationals tonight, and the Cardinals stay home and welcome, drumroll please, Homer Bailey and the Cincinnati Reds. So guaranteed victory for St. Louis tonight. The Cubs are 79-54. 25 games over 500 is the best of the year for them. And they're almost right at that 600 win percentage that I think is the guaranteed playoff mark, at least in the National League. The Cardinals are 75-59. They're 4.5 back. Milwaukee remains 5 back at 75-60. Pirates are 65-69, 14.5 back, and the Reds are 57-77, 22.5 games back. So the Cardinals keep winning. I did some math yesterday, and it was basically a look at the Cubs and the Cardinals over their last 30 games. And the point was, if the Cubs went 15-15 over their last 30 games, the Cardinals at that point would have had to have gone 20-10 to finish a game ahead of them in the standings. And going 20-10 for them at the point where we were in the schedule, the fact that they had gone 20-5 in the previous 25 games would mean that they would finish the season on a run of 40-15 over 55 games. That's an absurd run for any team to go on. And basically the Cubs would have to go 500 to allow them to win the division with that kind of run. So basically if the Cubs went 17-13 over their last 30 games, even going 40-15 wouldn't allow the Cardinals to beat them for the division. So that's a lot of weird math, but it kind of paints the picture of just how hot the Cardinals have been and just how much they'd have to keep it up to catch a Cubs team that's, you know, really hitting their stride at this point.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Cubs would pretty much have to have like a catastrophic, disastrous ending. Kind of like, was it 2004, where they just kind of fell apart in the last month of baseball and just basically shot their playoff hopes down the tube.
Yeah.
Something like that. Or, you know, name any. The Cubs have done this quite a few times historically. So pick your favorite catastrophe team, and that's basically what would have to happen for the Cubs to lose this division at this point. So I think they're probably safe. As long as they keep playing the way they're playing, they should be able to fight off the Cardinals, who are hot, but, you know, not by any means a team that the Cubs can't fight off in the moment. So,
yeah, the Cardinals gave an extension to their manager, Mike Schilt, who was the interim guy, based on 38 games, a really good 38 games. I think there were like 25-13 or 24-14, something like that. And it reminded me a ton of
Mike Quadi,
yeah, it was 37 games for him, and he was like 23-14 or something like that, or 24-13, over finishing the 2010 season with the Cubs, and they were impressed with what he did. Obviously, the Cubs weren't in a position where they could get back into a playoff chase under Mike Quadi, but he had a great finish to the year. They gave him that extension, and it turned out to be kind of smoke and mirrors. It wasn't so much because of him as it was, you know, just situational and getting a new voice in the clubhouse and getting kind of a toxic situation at that point with Lou Piniella, who was ready to just, you know, grab a daiquiri and go sit on a beach somewhere. Yeah. I'm not trying to say Mike Schilt is Mike Quadi, but the comparisons are really similar. And, you know, maybe he ends up being a much better manager. I'm not trying to say that because Mike Quadi had this happen very similarly, that it, you know, equates to him being a shitty manager long term. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I just think it's really interesting how the two things have run very similar paths.
Yeah, I think so too. He says him to Rick Renteria to an extent too, because I mean, he's like kind of just, you know, I don't know. He all of a sudden just had like moments where like the Cubs started playing a little bit better. And because I mean, if Joe Maddon wasn't available and at the start of the 2015, you know, year, I guess, or whatever, and the Cubs hadn't made that move to get him, Renteria would probably at least have managed at least another year or two. I don't think he would have stuck around for the Cubs, but, you know, it's just one of those weird things where it's like, okay, I mean, if the Cardinals keep having success underneath him, you have to kind of look at it and be like, okay, what is this manager doing? Clearly he's doing something to help, but I feel like it's more of just like the Cardinal people in general involved in that organization were just tired of Mike Matheny and his like very, I don't know, like dictator type of running baseball. Like he just wanted no fun, you know, yeah. It was a lot. Like they didn't even play music before pregame, before Dexter Fowler got there. Like, what are you doing? You're just literally listening to silence and baseball bats hit. Like, are you like, why? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, there's kind of the old saying among a lot of baseball people that a great manager doesn't add a ton of wins, but a bad manager can subtract a bunch. And that's really what it was with Mike Matheny. That guy just brought the Cardinals down so much, especially this season, that it was really time for him to go. And I think, you know, if they had brought in like, you know, a computer that just spit out lineup cards and made pitching changes, I feel like the Cardinals would have added some more wins just based on that. A computer versus Mike Matheny.
Mike Matheny versus Excel spreadsheet.
Or we could go back to this one. Siri, make the lineup card for the Cardinals today. All right, this has been episode 137 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis, again with Sean Sears. We're finishing up this week. Next week might be a bit different because Sean is starting a new schedule at work, so we're still trying to figure out when the podcast will be releasing, but we'll still have podcasts for you. So I guess enjoy your first weekend of actually having a weekend in like forever.
Oh, yeah. There'll be multiple naps and video game playing, but it'll be glorious.
For me personally, I don't even want to say this out loud, but my local movie theater is showing a Marvel MCU 10-year anniversary marathon.
Ooh.
So every day they're just throwing out three different Marvel movies and kind of running through it. So today at 4 o'clock, I'm taking my daughter to see the first Avengers movie in 3D. So I'm pretty excited about that.
That's actually really cool.
And then tomorrow, Guardians of the Galaxy is in 3D. And I really want to go to that, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to. So, yeah. But at any rate, I'm unemployed. So next week, when nobody else is around, I'm just going to go next Monday and be like, I'm seeing Iron Man in the theater.
I'm jealous, honestly. That sounds great.
Yeah, pretty much everyone I've told is pretty jealous. But anyway, you guys enjoy your weekend too. And we'll talk to you again next week.